Three.
Welcome to Working Musicians, a feature of theworkingmusician.com. I'm your host, Roger Z. I tend to move around a lot. I love that. Today, my special guest is Frank Pisani.
You got it.
That's right. Frank, I love it. We've got two guys who are follically challenged.
Yes.
On top.
Definitely not an advertisement for Hair Club for Men.
Frank, you know what's great?
Thanks for having me, Roger. It's a pleasure to be here.
Frank, you do so many things. You're a musician for hire. You're a vocal instructor. You're a keyboard instructor. You're a playwright. You write commercials. You write songs. There's so much you do. Most recently, I saw you play with the Tony T Orchestra at Enchiladas in Elmsford.
Right.
And then when I went to your website, when I finally found it, because I thought you were Pisano and not Pisani.
That would be a problem.
So when I finally found your website, which is PisaniMusic.com.
Yeah, www.
I saw that you played with T-Bone.
Oh, yeah.
And then I remembered, you were the second bald guy.
The second bald guy.
And that was a great group.
Yeah, it still is a great group. And I've been blessed to work with this extremely talented man, T-Bone, who's a great trombone player and singer for 20 years now. And one time we played a lot in the area, so a lot of people do recognize me from that great band, you know.
He's very funky.
We did everything, depending on the gig, but if you left us alone, we did a lot of funk stuff because we had horns and stuff like that, and both him and I tend to lean towards that side of things, you know. It's a great band. But like we said before, just surround yourself with good musicians and it's going to happen.
You know,
a great artist.
Musicians, band leaders always face this dilemma.
Yeah.
Do you put together a band with people who will commit to the band? Or do you put together a band with the best players available and switch players every gig?
Switch the chair, so to speak.
And the problem, I have some club owners tell me, well, you know, you sound different with different guys, and so that's hurting you, which I don't agree. My feeling is the fact that I sound different with different guys is awesome, because that means people can come see me more because I don't sound the same.
I think that that's a very interesting question, because it's something that I've been asked a lot, and I come across a lot because I do freelance for a living with a lot of different people. Basically, when you do what I do as a player and as a singer too, or anything in music really, and when you're freelancing, it's if someone calls and you're open, you take the gig. So even if I do play with Tony T a lot and a lot of people, Lois Colombo and T-Bone over the years and whoever, it's really if someone calls and I'm open, I commit to the date, and that's how I run the business end of what I do, because it can get confusing. But along the lines of what you were saying, Roger, with having bands that may use different players, you know, and there are some club owners or venues that say, well, no, it is different, you know, and it may say, well, maybe I need to rehearse a band. I really think it has to do with, for me, I've always been about the level of the musicianship, number one, and number two, the kind of music, you know.
Okay.
From my experience, like, for instance, I got called recently to do a band where I would have to rehearse, and they primarily do cover things like the record a lot, okay? And I'm not saying this is the way it should be, this is just what I found, right? And I said to them, I said, look, so the material that you do, if you have a book, if I go out on the road with a major artist and I'm subbing on a gig for whoever, Martha Reeves and the Vandellas or the Drifters or any of the other people that I played with over the years, and hopefully as long as they're playing, we'll play with. You come in, you read the book, you do it exactly as you're supposed to do. You read it, you execute the book and the arrangements, if they're going to be exact. And that's why they hire you, because you're a good reader and you know you're going to be able to step up to the plate with minimal amount of rehearsal or no rehearsal. So to get involved with a band that does things like that, I always say to them, look, if you're going to do that, make sure you have your thing together so that rehearsals go faster, because if you want a great player, right, and someone to commit the dates and do the book exactly, well, then if you have the book, you can get the great player, because he doesn't have to be at every rehearsal.
Right.
And a lot of people shy away from that. But then there is also the beautiful thing about if you're just doing the tune and I'm hired as a sideman to play in your band, My eye is on you, man, and I'm going to go where you go in whatever key you're in. And that, there's a certain amount, as you know, see, your eyes just lit up. Well, there's a certain amount of magic to that spontaneity.
Right. Well, you know, depending
on
the gig.
That's a dilemma. It does depend on the gig. The moral of the story.
What I do,
it depends on the gig.
What I do is I figure out pretty much the tunes I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I email the MP3s to them.
That's
I say, I don't do the exact arrangements.
Right.
I may not do this key, but I'll tell you the key.
Right, exactly.
These are the songs that we're going to do.
That's easy.
But what you said that separates you is that you realize that your job is to make me look good.
Oh, yeah. If you hire me as or this is your role tonight, because I'm a role player.
Right.
You know, I've learned that very early in my career, thank God, you know. And I tried to train myself to be that, right? If I'm hired to be the piano player, or whatever, keyboards, and background vocal, and add vocally to something, and you're leading the band, then with my eyes are on you, and I try to do what you want me to do. I get inside with what's going on with the music, and I play it authentically. I don't play jazz stuff over a blues song. You know, you got to be able to have the chops to do that. But my job is support.
Right, your job.
In that case, it would be support.
Right, your job is not to play flashy fills that come over the vocals.
Right. Well, that's the obvious, of course, yeah. But obviously, yeah. Because it's about blending and about ensemble work. And the other end of that is I get hired a lot, like by Tony T., who always surrounds me and puts great musicians in his band, and other people. I work for two different agencies this weekend, running industrial and private parties with a 10-piece band, and in other words, an 8-piece band. And I may know the musicians, but I was hired to lead the band. Now, that's a different story. I'm playing bass, I'm playing keys, and I'm singing. So what happens is that I expect everybody else, as I look at the crowd, I go, okay, I got to do this right now to make this crowd happy,
right,
to be able to go, all right, I'm doing Sentimental Journey, I'm a D minor, everybody follow me, let's go. And when you have, once again, it comes back to the kind of players. When the players know their role, like I would know my role, if it was reversed, the gig goes great. Because it really comes down to that.
Right. So, I mean, I think basically...
But is it? That's a wonderfully interesting question, because I come across...
Well, especially I do a 3-piece.
Yeah.
Because in this day and age,
there's
not a lot of money left on the table.
Yeah, sure.
But I always say, I'd rather get the best guys available. I'd rather have my first call guys call them first.
Yeah,
but
that's a good way to go.
But it's, you know, it's like you said, we got to interact. We got to be spontaneous.
It's about ensemble playing. You know, whether you're playing in a string quartet that you never met and you're reading a Mozart string quartet, a Beethoven string quartet, or whatever, all players are great, but you never met, but you got to do a gig. Or whether you're doing a trio, just to personalize it, and it's me, you're playing guitar, I'm playing bass and keys, and there's a drummer, and we're doing backing you up and doing your thing. No matter what it is, it comes down to ensemble playing.
Yes, it
does. You know, in the quartet, you follow the first violinist, because that's the chair.
So you play classical too?
Well, I was trained, yeah, I play anything you want me to play. I mean, it's the nature of the beast, but my
Where
training...
Where were you trained?
At a high school, I went to North Shore High School, came out of North Shore High School, and eventually settled in. I did my first... I went to Juilliard for a year and then transferred to Manhattan School of Music, where I was a composition major and a piano minor. Now, this is back in the late 70s, where they didn't have a jazz department at that time. So everything was classical, but it was great for me because I came up by ear. So it really kicked my you-know-what.
So they beat you down.
They beat me up, and it was the most wonderful thing in my life, because now I can handle anything. Give me a piece of paper and a pencil and a piano, and I will write whatever you want me to write, because I suffered through that and went, okay, this is the real deal. And also, it was pre-digital and pre-sequence, so there were no studio, not that there's anything wrong with this at all. That was the line from Seinfeld, was it? Not that there's anything wrong with this. Now they have studio comp and jazz departments. There's a lot more leeway where, you know, you could do things technologically that you can't do
well
now.
You can play the piano and then it prints out the score.
Yeah, but, so I'm very grateful that I came up during that time and was taught that way, because I really have no inhibitions about anything in terms of writing,
so,
and how to get the sounds.
So
put
I know
it to paper. So.
I know you've written commercials.
Yeah.
Name some famous commercials we might have seen.
I think I got the most airplay in the 80s out of a Sunoco Ultra 94 commercial. It was a very attractive young woman walking away from a Sunoco pump, and this is like 1989, you know.
Are you still writing commercials? Or?
I've done a few cable spots. Recently, some internet things, advertising, background stuff. I recently co-wrote two songs with a singer, Skip Giacco from City Island, who I'm in a band with called Lickety Split. that plays around, but I wrote two songs for an independent film called Doughboys. So I'm still, when the opportunity arises, I'm on it.
Which brings me to...
Because I enjoy working. It's fun to see the music match up to visual.
Now, currently you're shopping a musical called...
Zephyr's Pond, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's my baby. Well, yeah, it's a project.
Now, you're going to play a few... maybe we'll talk about that a little later.
Yeah, I'd love to play some songs from that, sure.
Play anything. Like I said, you got 10 minutes, set up a song.
It's a dangerous thing for the foot to say to me.
You're a professional.
Because usually it's like someone say, play a reggae tune, no problem. Play a jazz song, no problem. So whatever you want. But I'll play some of my songs today.
Right.
You know.
Okay.
I'm not a human jukebox today, which is nothing wrong with that. I love that. It's kind of a challenge for me.
So set up your first one and let's hear it.
Okay. I think I'll play something a little jazzy just to get going here. This is called Every Life. And, I don't know, unrequited love, familiar topic for a songwriter, or just someone realizing that, you know, you're in a relationship and somewhere along the way you may end up on the same path, but it may not be happening right now. So it's a familiar theme, but, it's kind of vibe. Every life.
From Zephyr?
No.
Okay.
That's just a jazzy pop slash.
I
don't know how to put things anymore. You know what it is? For me, I'm so used to doing things different way, different grooves. And I feel that if the song is well written, you can play it. You can do it a lot of different styles.
That sounded
so
like
I just felt show. I just felt
right.
Jazzy.
Show is what I say. I said it sounds like a show tune.
It's a little reminiscent of... moon dance type of thing vibe, you know, because of the jazz thing. But yeah,
very nice.
Thank you.
Very nice. So what do you got next for us?
Another tune?
Yeah.
Let's do. Let's see. I think I'll do. I'll keep some Zephyr's Pond stuff for maybe later. All right.
Whatever you want.
That might be fun. Let's do a song. Let's do a bluesy song. How about that? Something like that.
No, I'm sorry.
No? You want reggae?
Go ahead.
Go reggae ahead.
Whatever you want.
This song is called Just Talking About Me. That's why I listened to a lot of Dr. John when I was younger.
You know, let me ask you this question. I've read the bio of Dr. John, and he was originally a guitar player.
Yeah, I remember reading that somewhere.
And he got shot in the hand. So he said he couldn't play guitar anymore, so he switched to keyboards.
I dusted off that fact in my head.
Hello? I would think playing keyboards, you'd need your fingers and hands more than you would playing guitar.
I think if I remember correctly, it probably wasn't the same article, Roger, but I remember reading it somewhere. I think it had to do with his fingertips. Something where playing, you know, the part of the finger with a dexterity you can't do. I mean, you can kind of get away with it, you know, on a piano.
Okay.
You know, I know if I play, not that I play guitar, but I know, being a composition major, I know how to get sounds just on about every instrument. If I try to play a stringed instrument for a while, not having done it every day, I'm hurting. You know, not only the fact that I have no calluses, but the fact that this end of the joint is a different angle. You know,
right? So, you're using different.
So I'm just speculating, but that may be what
fingertips then.
It might have been had something to do with that part of his hand, but you know, once again, it comes down to playing authentically, you know. I mean, I tried to listen. The piano is such a, well, the guitar is too, obviously, but being that it's a harmonic instrument, you can play several notes and a lot of different rhythms on it, you know. It's not a unitone instrument like some instruments are. Guitar and piano have this in common, obviously. I tried to study through the ages how the piano was used, not only in classical music, but, you know, in Latin music. How is it used? Study that. How did it get that sound? In the blues. What is giving it a blues sound? What's giving it a jazz sound? And I think, to me, it's so important. I try, and hopefully I'll keep trying and learning the rest, as long as I'm alive, you know, because that really is the key, is to keep learning. Try to be as authentic as possible when I'm playing a gig. You know, if I'm playing a blues gig, I'm not going to play chords like that, you know? It's just not a blues chord. Or if I'm playing a Latin gig, I have to be able to know to do... you got to know what a montuno is. You can't fake it, because and that just comes down to studying.
Do you do a lot of Latin gigs?
I do a lot of Latin music, and I have done a lot of Latin gigs over the years. But when, even if I just am leading a band, and I feel like playing a salsa tune, and I say, look, I'm in B flat minor, and it's a 4-1-4, and I'm going to just vamp a montuno in a salsa groove, I want to be authentic with it. I don't want to just sort of get it, you know?
Sure.
Because to me, that's important.
Well, I would think with salsa, I would think with salsa...
Just to use that as an example.
I think with salsa, if people are dancing to it, they're going to know if it's authentic or not.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of it has to do with the rhythm, but just to mention salsa, and I only mention that because it is one of the many types of music where piano is a very... Using the sounds correctly is indigenous to that particular art form. Salsa music is basically... Old school salsa is bass, piano, percussion and horns. That's it. There's no drums. Just so that the motion in the piano or the montuno is so important to get because it is everything is based around it. But everything's like that. Even playing reggae. I mean, whatever the music is, doesn't matter. You got to play it.
You got to feel
the way it's right. And that's not only feeling it. I think you're right about that. But you have to know how to do it. Like, how do you get that sound in jazz? Like, what is that? Oh, how does a reggae? What makes a reggae? What, you can feel it, but if you don't study it and don't know it, then you're probably not going to be able to apply your talent to it, knowing that certain things about it.
What's very interesting to me.
That's my point. Long-winded, but that's my point.
I just started listening to this Tito Puente album called El Reo, because I wanted to hear the original Oye Como Va.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is really different from Santana's.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to say, I like Santana's better, but maybe that's because I heard it more. But what freaked me out...
It's also got a lot... Not that you need to hear guitar to be entertained because you're a guitar player, but it is... There's a lot of guitar-oriented stuff.
Well, I think what he does is...
There's no guitar in the Tito song.
Right, but I think what Santana does is he focuses... He hits the melody more in the song.
Absolutely.
In the other version, there's a lot of flute, there's a lot of stuff in the background, but there's no real loud solo instrument.
No. It's an ensemble. It's Tito. It's an ensemble thing. I think that's a early, late 60s record probably of his.
All I know is what freaked me out is all of a sudden I'm listening to it and I that sounds like Giant Steps.
Well, you know what? I haven't heard it recently. But I know I'm familiar with the kind of ensemble that Tito was working with at that time, and you're going to get, you know, two trumpets, two trombones, sax, maybe a flute doubling on the sax. So you're going to get some pretty sophisticated chords in there.
Well, I just couldn't believe.
But you're going to make it sound. What? It goes back to the sound, right?
Right. But he's playing Coltrane. I just couldn't believe it.
It's great.
It was really great. Awesome. You know, we're going to do part two of the show.
Okay.
We're
going to
have you, we're going to have you play some more stuff.
Great.
I'd just like to go with the flow.
Yeah, sure.
In closing, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions.
Of course.
Now, this is a weighted keyboard.
Yeah.
Now, what that means is, even though it's an electric piano, the keys, when you hit them, they go down as if they were a real piano.
Yeah, that's exactly what it means.
Now, on your live gig, do you use a weighted electric keyboard, or do you use a synthesizer?
When I play out live?
Or do you use both, or what's your setup like?
Yeah, for many years, I used to work with Kurzweil, PC-88, which is a very heavy keyboard. It's a weighted keyboard.
Okay.
And it's a beautiful instrument, because, I mean, I'm partial to a weighted keyboard, because it does feel...
Like a real
tension.
Piano.
Yeah, and it's a little easier to adjust to, especially having come up trained on them.
Old school.
But nowadays, quite frankly, the Yamaha people and a lot of other people do such a great job with great sounds. I'm using a lighter keyboard now that isn't weighted, and as long as I, in my mindset, I make the adjustment, I'm fine. I've even done record dates recently on unweighted keyboards, so I think that's part of the job nowadays, is to be able to play and get the right kind of feel and action on something that either is weighted or not weighted. And that can be hard at times.
I just need to give a plug because...
Absolutely.
This keyboard...
That's right.
...was donated by Frank and Camille's piano shop.
And we thank you, Frank and Camille.
Right.
Frank Pisani thanks Frank
right.
and Camille.
We don't have the sign up because we don't want people to think you are Frank Camille. You are Frank Pisani.
Right.
So it's interesting. It's interesting. I had a keyboard player on, you know, Matt King. I don't know if you know Matt King.
No, I'm not familiar with him.
And he has this tiny little red keyboard, uh-huh. but he, you know, it's like you said, he just gets every sound.
Yeah, the thing about, I don't use it too much myself, to be honest with you, because and I think this is by preference as well as just it happens that way. I don't do a lot of sequencer work. I use the technology in the studio if I have to, if I need to create something, but I find it just too limiting for me as a musician to play with tracks that are pre-recorded because I can't do this any spontaneous stuff. So most times when I work, if I'm not playing just keyboards and as a sideman and background vocals or whatever for someone, you know, another act like yourself or whatever, a lot of times I do a lot of piano bass, I mean, keyboard bass and piano, keyboard sounds and sing. So I carry two keyboards so I have a full length on the bottom and I've got enough bass sounds to be authentic up there. And matter of fact, there's a CD that I did recently with two friends of mine called ASAP with Sam Allen, John Smith on guitar, Sam Allen on drums, and myself playing a Baby Grand Steinway and me playing bass. And the name of the CD is ASAP. It can be got on my website. There's a store on my website. And I mention it is because I'm very proud of it because I've done so many years of left-hand bass that it really is an art form for me. It really is. I take it very seriously. And I know some people don't. It's like, oh, I got to play left-hand bass. For me, it's like, if I can't do that gig and annoy some bass player out there, then I'm not doing my job. Or if some people, as long as people feel, you know, so this record I do, and it's all live, I'm very proud of it because it came out great, and it's a dying art form. I know, you know, when I was coming up, Roger, if you played organ, you played left hand and foot pedal. So I developed a real big appreciation for this particular skill.
Sure. You know, well, that was the jazz of the 60s, Jimmy Smith.
Yeah, right, exactly. You know, so now when I do it, I try to do it very well, and I'm proud of that record.
Thank you so much for coming down, Frank.
My pleasure, Roger.
We're going to talk a little
Thanks
more.
Thanks for having me. It was great. Yeah.
You okay?